Chapter 59. Domus. Domus. D-O-M-U-S. A house. A home. Any building or abode. One's native place. One's country or home. Confer patria. A household. A family. From Latin. From Proto-Italic. Domus. From Proto-Indo-European. Dom, house or home. Hiruzen has had too little sleep and too many hours of worrying. His back is one whole crick, his eyes ache, and there's a persistent pressure beating against the inside of his skull as he slumps over his desk. With a sigh, he slides off his glasses, rubbing the bridge of his nose, and thinks longingly of his bedroom at home. There's nothing to be done, though. He sent Shukaku and Fugaku home hours ago, back to the families that will look for them. His own won't bother. Too many nights absent, too many days gone, and he's hardly a part of their lives at all beyond a name and a face on a mountain. There's a quiet rap on the door, carefully even, and Hiruzen tries his hardest to stifle a sigh. Whoever wants his attention now is just one more stone atop a pile that's threatening to cause an avalanche, and Hiruzen honestly wonders what will be left of him after it spills. "Come in," he calls regardless, because there's nothing else he can do. Tobirama always put the village first, put his people first, and Hiruzen thinks of that night in the forest again. His teacher, so wise and strong, disappearing into the darkness because he believed the next generation could be better. Hiruzen pushes down the lance of old grief. He always suspected that Tobirama made that sacrifice in part so that the legacy of the clan wars would end with him, and under the belief that children raised in the village would be more likely to lead Konoha into a time of peace. For all his genius, Hiruzen thinks, wryly sad, Tobirama always had a strain of idealism to him that proved he was very much Hashirama's brother. There's a moment of hesitation that draws his attention, because that means it's clearly not another kage or village head on his doorstep. Confidence is not a trait any of his fellow leaders lack. He frowns a little, about to rise, and the door swings open. "Dad," Asuma says, hovering in the doorway as if unsure of his welcome. His hair is too long, to the point of being shaggy, and he's still wearing that battered old jacket with the fur-lined collar, the sash marking him as one of the 12 guardian ninja, tied around his waist. It's been years since Hiruzen saw him last, and his glasses slip from nerveless fingers, clattering down onto the desk as he pushes sharply to his feet. All at once, his back decides to protest, and he winces as muscles knot, but pushes through. "Asuma," he answers, and can't tell if the wonder is clear in his voice. It likely is. He'd half thought that he'd never see his son again, that Asuma would simply stay in the capital for the rest of his life, their disagreement running too deep to allow him to return.
"Have you been here all night?"
There's an edge of well-remembered exasperation in Asuma's voice, but it's not as sharp as it once was. It isn't angry, and Hiruzen feels a tension he hadn't even recognized slide out of his frame.
"Not by choice, believe me," he answers, and it comes out more wryly than he intends.
He puts a hand on his back, straightening more slowly this time, and takes a breath.
"Are you on leave, Asuma?"
There's a hesitation as Asuma looks him over, carefully assessing, and then says, "No,
back for good. I heard about the excitement and wanted to make sure you hadn't had a heart attack.
Hiruzen snorts softly, casting a glance over the surface of his desk, piled high with scrolls and papers and files he hasn't had a chance to put away yet.
Do you think that will get me out of my next meeting? He asks wistfully. I'm sure I could trigger one if I just thought about the situation for a little too long.
There's a startled moment of silence, and then Asuma chuckles.
Not yet, please. I only just got home.
He pushes the door open further, checking the room for any other occupants, and then tips his head.
Come on, I know you haven't eaten breakfast yet, and I only just got in. Let's get something to eat.
It is about time, Hiruzen supposes, and if they're quick... He stops himself before he can finish that thought, pressing a hand over his eyes.
No.
No, because this is his son, finally back from the capital, and their last words were shared in anger and frustration. Hiruzen has never been a good father, because his duty has always been to Konoha first, and Biwako married him knowing that. It gave him rather more leeway to leave his family to their own devices than he truly deserved. And that's one of Hiruzen's biggest regrets. No time for his son and daughter and grandson. No time for his wife. No time for Naruto, even when he should have made time. It's not a mistake he's going to make again.
I could eat an ox, he says decisively, straightening one last stack of papers and stepping around the edge of his desk.
A moment of inner debate, and he leaves the hat where it lies, strips off the heavy robes as well, and drapes them neatly over the back of his chair. When he looks around, Asuma's brows are high with surprise, and Hiruzen meets his gaze with a tired smile. Three steps past him, out into the main room, and he catches Izumo by the elbow as the chunin staggers up the last of the stairs with a load of papers.
Izumo, if you'd be so kind as to leave those on my desk, and then send a messenger to the other Kage to let them know the meeting is rescheduled for 10, just tell them something has come up.
Izumo blinks, glancing between Hiruzen and Asuma, and then smiles brightly.
Of course, Hokage-sama, he agrees. I'll let anyone who comes looking know that you'll be back later.
Thank you, Hiruzen pats him on the shoulder, then turns to look expectantly at his son.
There's a long pause, and then Asuma chuckles.
Neglecting your work, old man? He asks.
But there's a warm sort of humor in his voice, and he falls into step down the stairs. Hiruzen thinks of Tobirama, so devoted to the next generation. Thinks of Kurama, so desperately willing to sacrifice anything at all for those he loves. Thinks of Kushina and Sakumo returned to the dead to the families that have needed them so sharply. It's a good reminder, he thinks, and feels for the weight of the Hitayate in his pocket. Not worn anymore, but carried. Tobirama was the one to hand it to him, the day he, Homura, and Koharu passed the bell test. Well, for a given value of passed, they never had a hope of getting even one bell off the Nidaime Hokage, but they'd given it their best shot. Maybe, in the end, it's the effort that counts the most.
I've been recently reminded, he says, and the words are light, but the meaning behind them is anything but, that all things in life require a certain amount of balance. And besides, I believe I'll be returning to retirement before the year is out.
And won't that be a surprise to the replacement he has in mind?
Hiruzen would be lying if he claimed that wasn't one of the perks.
Morning in Suna is one of the few comfortable times to walk the streets, and Rasa tries to make a habit of it whenever he has the time. That habit makes him restless now, far from his village in a place with too much green and too many people. But he isn't about to drag his guards out and into the street. They're very close to enemies here, with the last Shinobi World War so recently passed. It's only been a few years, and Shinobi have a long memory for grudges. He paces the room instead, trying to keep his mind off the tight quarters of the room he shares with his children. His remaining children. And the thought has teeth. but he can't allow himself to dwell on it. The Uzumaki siblings have made it clear that he has no say in his youngest son's life any longer. Rasa will deny to his dying day that a part of him is relieved. Gaara outside of Suna ceases to be a problem that has to be dealt with through force. Gaara capable of channeling and controlling Shukaku is only a political problem, and Rasa might be many things, but blind isn't one of them. There's no way Kurama will allow Gaara to be used as a weapon, and that means Rasa can focus on Kurama's loyalty, Kurama's abilities, Kurama's threat. He doesn't have to kill his son anymore. Stopping beside the Seoul window, Rasa stares out over Konoha, but he doesn't see the greenery-covered buildings. Instead, it's his brother-in-law most clearly in his mind. Yashimaru, with his kind smile and gentle eyes, and all the hate he held for Rasa, so fiercely protective, just like Karura, but... A wound of the heart is different from a flesh wound. Unlike flesh wounds, there are no ointments to heal them, and there are times when they never heal at all. It was something Yashimaru said to Gaara, but Rasa had overheard. Overheard and dismissed it as nonsense from a medic nin who was too soft, too kind to a boy who needed to be stronger. If he'd been stronger, Yashimaru would still be alive, Rasa had thought after that disastrous mission, furious and far too caught up in his grief to consider who was truly at fault. If Gaara had managed to control himself, the last remnant of Karura would still exist. Dozens of Suna's citizens would still be alive, and Rasa wouldn't be facing an out-of-control monster instead of a little boy. Except, I'm staying with Kurama-ni! Gaara had used Shukaku's power without being consumed by it. And if the Kapinin's words are to be believed, it's not the first time. Kurama's closeness with the boy Rasa could write off. If the Uzumaki really is the 10th Jinchuriki, he likely has little reason to fear the Ichibi's power. But that moment? Rasa scrubs a hand over his face and tries not to let his regret creep up on him. He did what he had to for the sake of his village, and Uzumaki Kushina's taunting words don't change that. How many times did you use the Ichibi when you were at war with Konoha? If Jinchuriki are supposed to keep villages at about the same power level, it failed. And if they're supposed to keep villages from fighting, that didn't work either. Suna is already the weakest of the five great nations, kept as one of the five by history more than anything. Even Taki rivals them in size, and Wind Country's economy doesn't look to be improving. Their defeat in the last war left them vulnerable, incredibly weakened, and reeling from the loss of so many high-level shinobi. Sealing Shukaku into Gaara right before the end of Karura's pregnancy was supposed to be the last resort, a last line of defense to keep Suna from being overrun by the next Kage, searching for a soft target to expand their empire. Rasa knows his fellow Kage, his fellow nations. Konoha is largely peaceable, because they have no need to be otherwise. The village rests on fat coffers, more missions than its shinobi have time for, more resources than it could use in 10 years of famine. Iwa is isolated, proud, and aggressive, and Rasa trusts only that Onoki will always look out for his village and his pride before all else. Kiri is too far away to worry about overmuch, and has enough internal strife even now to keep Yagura occupied. Kumo makes Rasa wary, and he knows it's a sentiment most of his fellow Kage share. A, like his father, is arrogant, and Kumo is stronger than Iwa, strong enough to make their military might a constant threat, and more than ready to snatch up any and all power that crosses their path. Rasa remembers hearing about the Hyuga incident, barely 3 years ago. The first time he was briefed on the circumstances, he was absolutely certain it was going to lead to war. So utterly certain that that was what A was aiming for, because there was no other option in the face of such a blatant attack.
He'd readied his shinobi, shored up his defenses, and waited for Sarutobi to call Suna, as a reluctant ally, to come to Konoha's aid. Sarutobi hadn't, though. Konoha simply accepted the attack, the insult, the death of a prominent jonin from a main clan, and Urasa still can't quite tell if he thinks it a weakness or a strength. Konoha has a lot of moments like that, he's noticing. He's just about to turn away and start pacing again, when there's a light tug at his sleeve. He glances down in mild surprise, not expecting any company this early. But Tamari's wide, dark eyes are staring up at him, wide awake and faintly plaintive.
"Yes, Tamari?" he asks.
Tamari looks at him for a long moment, painfully similar to Karura when she had a weighty question, and then glances out the window.
"Is Gaara really here?"
she asks, achingly tentative. And Rasa can't tell if the expression on her face is fear or something else entirely. The sound of blankets shifting draws Rasa's attention, and he glances over to see that Kankuro is awake as well, sitting up on his futon and watching warily. They're both waiting for an answer, but Rasa knows that the answers he has aren't ones they're going to want to hear. Hearing that any family, no matter how distant, has picked a near stranger over blood.
"He is," Rasa says, as gently as he's able.
Tamari chews on her lip for a moment, weighing her words.
"Is he coming here soon?"
she asks. Rasa looks at his daughter, who tried so hard, despite her fear, to love her youngest sibling. At his son, terrified and tentative, who nonetheless always stuck by Temari's side when she tried to approach Gaara. And he thinks, tired and a little pained, of the way Gaara curled in Kurama's arms, unwilling to let go. A wound of the heart is different from a flesh wound. Unlike flesh wounds, there are no ointments to heal them, and there are times when they never heal at all.
"No," Rasa says, and the truth of it stings in his throat like regret. "No, Tamari, I don't think he is."
The sound of laughter wakes Sakumo from his daze, and he lifts his head, searching for the source of it on instinct. The sun is already rising, which is a surprise and not entirely a pleasant one. He thought he was done losing time this way, standing before cold graves. The sound of happy children is a balm, though, and sorely needed. His bones are chilled through, and he wonders how long he's been standing here, staring at the lilies left on his own grave. Kakashi's hand, he's sure of it. There's likely no one else left who would bother. He turns away, forcing down the thought of his son still leaving flowers at his grave, looks towards the road in time to see a flash of crimson. Kurama is on the path, two children with him. The youngest two, if Sakumo recognizes them. One is Kushina's son, and the other is the Kazekage's. But there's little difference in the way they adhere to the man. The red-headed boy in his arms, and the blonde on his shoulders, clinging to hanks of Kurama's hair like reins. It makes Sakumo smile just a little, and very much despite himself. And without conscious thought, he finds himself moving, drifting towards the road in time to intercept them.
"Good morning," he offers lightly,
breaking into an argument about whether ramen is acceptable breakfast food. It sounds like Kurama is losing anyway, and Sakumo knows exactly what it's like to be out-argued by a child. Kakashi's got his mother's attitude, and it was always simultaneously Sakumo's greatest joy and his biggest headache.
"Old man,"
Kushina's son chirps, sounding just like her.
"Hi, you look like Kakashi."
"I think it's more that Kakashi looks like him, Naruto,"
Kurama says dryly, but he nods to Sakumo easily enough and doesn't protest when Sakumo falls into step with them.
"Eh?"
Naruto asks in confusion, craning his head to stare at Kurama upside down.
"Why's that, Kurama-ni?"
Kurama rolls his eyes, but his voice is still patient as he answers. Because he's Kakashi's father, Kit.
Really?
Naruto twists back around, staring at Sakumo's face like it's a puzzle.
But you don't act like Kuramani does.
Ouch. From the mouth of babes, Sakumo thinks with a wince, though he tries not to let his smile falter. I'm not your father, brat, Kurama says crankily, apparently completely unaware of the fact that that's exactly what he looks like right now. When Naruto just laughs, though, he huffs out an irritated breath, nudges the blonde back upright as he starts to slide, and glances over at Sakumo with unnervingly sharp eyes. Well? Clearly he isn't getting away without some sort of answer. With a rueful smile, Sakumo drags a hand through his hair, looking away, and says, clearly he doesn't want to talk to me, and I'm not about to force my presence on him after what I did. The footsteps beside him stop. Surprised, Sakumo turns, and then almost wishes he'd kept walking. Kurama is staring at him, fire in his eyes and something like buried fury in his expression. And that crimson gaze is hot enough to hurt. With a low growl, he stalks forward and jabs Sakumo square in the chest with one talon-tipped finger. What the fuck? He demands sharply. And when Sakumo opens his mouth to respond, Kurama steamrolls right over him. No, no, fuck that, you asshole. You didn't take Kakashi's opinion into account before you went and killed yourself, so why the fuck should you do it now? What the hell has changed? You left him alone when he was barely even self-sufficient, and you fucking broke him. Take some goddamn responsibility, bastard, and man up and talk to your son. And if you hurt him any more than you already have, I'm going to feed you your spleen. With a snarl of pure rage, Kurama gives him one last withering look, grabs Naruto's ankle, and leaps for the nearest tree. In an instant, the only trace of his presence is Naruto's fading whoops, and the red of the other boy's hair peeking over Kurama's shoulder before they vanish completely into the shadows. Feet frozen where they are, Sakumo slowly reaches up to rub at the neat hole Kurama's sharp nail left in his shirt. There's a dot of blood beneath, but... well, Sakumo is absolutely certain he deserves much worse at this point. He closes his eyes, fighting down the knot in his throat that tastes of bitter cowardice. He's been hiding, and there's no use denying it. Hiding beside his own grave, and gods, but how low can he sink? All night he's been staring at the evidence that Kakashi has mourned him, the flowers carefully placed, and surely, surely almost 13 years is long enough to move on. Maybe Sakumo can't remember all of it as clearly as he'd like, and maybe the sting of betrayal is still fresh in his heart, but Sakumo made the wrong choice once already, and it must have been wrong if Kushina and Kurama and Kakashi's own distance are to be believed. Maybe the root of that decision was cowardice, too. Escape, a final, irreversible way of hiding from his shame, and... Sakumo has had enough of hiding. He turns, heart beating too hard in his chest, ready to call up a summons and find his son, and stops dead for a second time, eyes widening. Dad? Kakashi asks, just as startled, and takes a step back that looks more automatic than conscious. And it hurts, seeing that. But Sakumo can't blame him. Kakashi, he says, and tries to make his smile fit his face the way it's supposed to. It's difficult, because the Kakashi in front of him is so incredibly different from the little boy he remembers. But at the same time, there's no way Sakumo would ever mistake him for anyone else. There's a thread of faint wariness in Kakashi's eyes, and he takes a step to the side, uncovered eye flickering over the road. I thought Kurama came this way. Have you seen him? Sakumo chuckles before he can help it, faintly sheepish, and rubs a hand over the back of his head. Yes, I saw him. I see you're still good at making friends with unique characters, Kakashi. I'm glad.
Kakashi freezes, looking like he's torn between reactions.
Friends? He finally says, and it's very nearly tentative. Sakumo gives him a wry smile, and this one, at least, comes more naturally. Well, people don't threaten to rip out other people's spleens for just anyone, if I'm remembering correctly. He must be very fond of you. A particular look slides over Kakashi's face and is quickly buried, but not before Sakumo catches it.
He threatened you, he repeats, faintly disbelieving.
Sakumo looks at him for a moment, and regardless of whatever he feels about Konoha, regardless of the faint traces of resentment he can't quite seem to shake for the way things turned out, he still can't fight a very small smile. Because none of that is aimed at Kakashi. Kakashi was the reason he lasted as long as he did, skills growing worse as his belief in himself faded, as the village whispered venom and mocked and blamed him. Maybe it wasn't enough, in the end, as Sakumo's self-loathing and guilt and shame grew too deep. But without Kakashi, he would have fallen on his sword so much sooner. And in the end, so much of his decision was for what he thought was Kakashi's sake, sparing him the dishonor of growing up in the shadow of Sakumo's disgrace.
Of course he did, he says gently, and takes a breath.
Steals himself with every last ounce of the courage he can scrape up in the depths of his soul, and tells his son,
Kakashi, I know that forgiveness isn't something I have any right to ask for, and that what I did can't be made right,
but it has been, Kakashi interrupts, and he isn't quite looking at Sakumo, but he hasn't turned and walked away yet either. You're alive. Sakumo hesitates, but he can't do anything but shake his head. No, making it right would be having never done it in the first place. I can't change what's already happened, or what my decisions did to you as much as I wish I could. As useless as the words are, I'm sorry. There's a long moment of silence, and then Kakashi reaches up, closing his fingers around the plate of the slanted hitayate he wears. Sakumo can't see his face, can't make out any part of his expression, but he can hear it when he says, quiet but clear, I understand now why you chose what you did on your mission. You made the only choice you could live with, and you made it for the sake of everyone in Konoha. You put your teammates first, and that was a legacy I learned to be proud of. It feels like a hand closed tight around his lungs, like hot pressure against the backs of his eyes. Sakumo takes a breath that shakes and can't quite let it out for fear of it shattering into a sob. He presses his hand over his eyes, too much vulnerability on display for him not to, and tries not to think for a handful of seconds. He doesn't hear footsteps, but a hand settles on his shoulder, hesitates, then squeezes gently. The house is still open, Kakashi says, and his touch falls away. I didn't move anything afterwards. There's a ripple of wind that smells of leaves, and Sakumo doesn't have to look up to know that Kakashi is gone. It's all right, though. For the first time since he opened his eyes in a new world, Sakumo doesn't feel like his life, too, will end in tragedy. Maybe it's only a spark of hope, but a spark is all that's ever needed to set a wildfire to blazing. It turns out that Kurama's ability to track a weak, half-remembered chakra signal across the bustle of Konoha at mid-morning is pretty much shit. With a sigh of frustration, he stops at the edge of the closest training ground, eyeing the bank of the river balefully. He could have sworn. Are we exploring Kurama-ni? Naruto asks cheerfully, halfway draped over Kurama's head. I like looking at things from so high up. Well, Kurama is glad one of them is having fun. He glances down at Gaara, raising a brow. and the boy offers him a smile.
I like walking, Kuramani,
he agrees.
Only because you're not doing any of the actual walking part, Kurama grumbles.
But when Gaara just gives him wide aquamarine eyes, he sighs and boosts him up a little higher. Yeah, yeah, okay, give me a second here. We should be going. Fuck, Kurama doesn't have a clue.
Are you lost?
A polite voice asks, faintly curious, and Kurama jerks around. One look at the newcomer, perched up on the limb of a tree with a medical textbook, and he's ready to curse. Of course he would end up stumbling over the brat without even noticing.
Naruto, why don't you and Gaara check out the river?
He suggests, and Naruto cheers like this is the best idea he's ever heard.
Come on, Gaara,
he urges, as Kurama sets him down on his feet.
It's really pretty under the bridge. Let me show you.
Gaara glances up at Kurama, and when Kurama gives him a crooked smile, he nods solemnly, taking Naruto's hand and letting the blonde tow him toward the bank. Kurama watches them for a moment to make sure they don't fall in, then turns and with a quick leap lands lightly on the bough a handful of inches from their observer's sandals.
I was looking for you, actually,
he says, meeting cautious, dark eyes as evenly as he can.
Me?
Kabuto says, and the surprise in his voice only just manages to cover up the wariness.
I'm afraid I don't understand, sir.
Can it? Kurama says shortly. I know you're Orochimaru's spy, and I can help you get him out as long as he agrees to owe me a few favors. Something like fear slides into Kabuto's expression, but he doesn't let himself waver.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Bullshit, Kurama says impatiently. You weren't found in a pass after a battle. You were one of Danzo's recruits from an orphanage near Konoha, and Orochimaru offered you a way out after your only real family tried to kill you. You've been spying for him for years now. Kabuto looks like he's hardly breathing, staring at Kurama with wide eyes. With a sigh, Kurama sits back on his heels, studying the kid narrowly.
Well, do you want to get him out or not?
There's hesitation as Kabuto looks him over carefully, then sweeps a glance over their surrounding area. Finally satisfied that they're alone and Kurama isn't about to bolt for the Hokage, he takes a breath and closes his book.
Why?
He asks, and his eyes are too intelligent for the 14-year-old he's supposed to be.
Orochimaru-sama is your enemy.
Kurama watches him for a moment, turning various answers over, and then says, Why don't you trade me answers? Tell me why you follow Orochimaru, and I'll tell you my reasons for letting him go. Kabuto accepts the deal with a single nod.
Orochimaru-sama helped me find out who I was after Danzo and Root took that away from me, he says, and his eyes don't waver from Kurama's.
He's building a home for me, for himself, for those like us. That's why.
Otogakure,
Kurama thinks, and the fact that the timeline matches up to his hopes is a relief.
I might not like the snake bastard, but he's powerful. I need a few favors, and he's more useful outside of Konoha. You go with him, and both of you leave Konoha alone, okay? You need something, information or whatever, send me a message.
That's all, Kabuto asks, faintly suspicious.
A favor?
Three of them,
Kurama corrects, giving him a grin full of teeth. One for giving you the keys to the seals on him, one for getting you into where he's being held, and one for not turning you over to the Hokage right now. Kabuto's hands clench tight around his textbook, and he looks like he can't decide whether to throw it at Kurama or accept the deal.
Look, kid, Kurama says, and he's starting to lose his patience. If Orochimaru stays in Konoha, there's every chance Sarutobi gets rid of him permanently. The Sandaime is old, but he's smart. He's not going to leave someone that dangerous alive, right?
He almost feels bad for the way Kabuto pales, eyes widening. The boy looks down at his hands, still white-knuckled around the textbook, and then nods.
All right, he whispers.
Kurama blows out a breath, then reaches out and gruffly ruffles his hair.
Don't look like it's a death sentence, kid. Now you don't have to pretend to be someone you're not. It might help you figure out more of who you are. He ignores the wide-eyed blinking Kabuto is doing and drops from the tree, heading towards the river to collect his two charges. Naruto, Gaara, come on, let's go home before Kushina and the girls level our new house in the name of training. Naruto laughs, scrambling up the bank with Gaara right behind him, and he launches himself at Kurama's knees with a dangerous force.
Kurama knee up! And it's okay if they break stuff, the creepy face wood guy can just make us a new one. Shisui said so.
Kurama snorts, scooping them both up in one go and boosting Naruto up onto his shoulders. Did he now? But I like it as it is, so let's try not to break it just yet, okay?
Okay, Kurama-ni.
Gaara agrees. And when Naruto pouts, Gaara tugs pointedly on the leg of his pants.
Okay.
Naruto huffs, almost a whine.
But it would be really cool to see a house get builded.
Built, Kurama corrects with a roll of his eyes. He glances up at Kabuto, still watching with wide, wary eyes, and says, tomorrow. The teenager hesitates, but before Kurama can push, he nods. I'll be waiting here, he agrees.
Bye,
Naruto calls cheerfully, waving to him as Kurama starts down the road. Once Kabuto is out of sight, he grabs Kurama's hair again and asks,
can we get ramen now, Kurama-ni? I'm hungry.
You're always hungry, Kurama complains half-heartedly, but turns his steps towards the village regardless. Just don't tell your mom, okay? She's going to torture me again for going to Ichiraku without her.
It's a secret,
Naruto agrees brightly.
I won't let my mom beat you up, Kurama-ni.
Brat, the only one getting beaten up would be her, so watch your mouth. Naruto laughs, Gaara giggles, and Kurama rolls his eyes, steals a small sandal so he can tickle Naruto's feet, and holds him steady as he squirms and shrieks for mercy.